because, you know, they might tell you. That's the scary part. So, did you feel more encouraged while you were looking those things up? Whoa. So, I mean, what happened? Did something put like an extra fear of God in you, or why were you up at 3? Sounds like diligence to me. Doesn't that sound like diligence? So anybody here ever despair? who here has ever despaired? Have you ever despaired? Selma? Yeah, ever? Never in your whole life? Really? Not when you were 5 or when you were 10? You never felt hopeless? Hopeless? Well, I don't want to talk you into it. One of the definitions of despair is to turn one's back on hope. So that one interests me quite a bit, because that means that there is hope and that it's behind you and that you turned away from it. Who can tell me what things will last forever? What? Oh, no, I didn't ask like what won't. I asked what will, sort of. not much. But so if someone comes up to you on the street, you know, and you just have this feeling about them, and they say, "What will last forever?" And will your answer be, "Not much"? Is love. What, anything else? What? Yeah, I'm pretty sure. What? Faith, hope, and love abide these three. But the greatest is love. And why, you know why I think the greatest is love? Or why do you think the greatest is love? You know, that's a really good answer. It reminds me a lot of something I used to do in my English class, is when I was asked to use a word in a sentence, and like, you know, it could have been lugubrious or perfunctory or something. If I didn't know, I'd just say, "I do not know what perfunctory means." I can use any word in a sentence, no problem. Is what? Couldn't quite hear you. For our existence? Yeah. You know, if we're, what? Very good, Amy. You get an A plus, and you get the little gold star that you lick the back of and stick on top of the paper. I remember those little gold stars the teacher had when I was in first grade and maybe on. Everything's different now, but there were these little stars. They came in red and gold, silver, maybe other colors. What? Now they're on something. You peel them off and say, see, everything is just so easy now. You don't have to do any work. So do you use them? Oh! It warms my heart that there are still little sticky stars that get put on stuff. At IBM?
Yes.
It's It seems to me I remember getting some of those little stars on at least something I did when I was in grade school. But, so the reason we have hope is because there is love, right? We were loved, and our hope comes out of the fact that we're loved. And I know some people, if you say God is love, they make fun of you, and they say that, you know, that that's not what God is. And of course, they think that what you're saying is that, I don't know what they think, but it's kind of like you're saying that God is this one emotion or something. But the line really is talking about something that's comprehensive and all-encompassing about God's nature, right? His nature is love and to love, and everything about God connects to that somehow. It's all rooted in that. So because of that, we can have hope. And let's see, so if we have hope, then we don't need to despair. We don't need to despair. If we don't need to despair, how often should we despair? Okay, the next question is much more difficult. How often should we condemn somebody else for despairing? Very good. I wish I had some of those sticky stars. I'd come and stick one on each of your foreheads, you know, like maybe that we can work that into Pesach. We should never condemn anyone for despairing. So let's see, you searched high and low in the Bible trying to find where it teaches us to despair, and you couldn't find it. Is that how it went? Oh, you just gave up on the search right from the beginning? Okay. So, but in the Bible, though, you come across people that seem like they've despaired, right? You know? I mean, you know, like Elijah, for instance, he says, you know, they've killed all the prophets, they've done all these horrible things, I'm the only one left, you know. He wants to die. And David says some stuff that sounds pretty depressed sometimes. And although at the moment where, you know, there was a moment where his men were going to kill him, they were going to stone him to death. Now, I've only had a couple of times when all of you were going to stone me to death. So, you know, I'm trying to remember how it feels. Is there anyone present here that was going to stone me at one time? Some of you have been around a long time. You probably have reason to feel like maybe stoning me. No, nobody? Oh. I don't know. Have you ever... You know, I'm starting to suspect that maybe sometimes we might feel, any one of us, we might almost feel like people want to stone us. Anybody ever felt like that? Not necessarily literally, but, you know, like, things are really bad. Everybody is just really... Nobody likes you. Everybody hates you, or maybe kind of despises you, if not total hate. You know, like, you just don't belong anywhere. You're no good. Anybody ever feel like that? You've never felt like that. That's great. My mom used to talk about the little boy that said, "Nobody likes me. Everybody hates me. I think I'll go eat worms." And she said that when I was like really feeling sorry for myself. But my mom was quite sympathetic, but she also, you know, wanted to show me, like, give me a look at myself sometimes, you know, without making me feel like she was throwing rocks at me. And I will say, I never felt like my mom was throwing rocks at me. But she would try to put a mirror up to me, some sort of mirror that she could think of that would make me see myself. And I could kind of see myself when she'd bring that up. And then sometimes when we were acting not so good, probably mostly when we were a little older, we were terrible. I mean, we really were just awful. And wonderful, too, I suppose. But she had a pair of sunglasses. They were wire-rimmed sunglasses. They had no lenses, and they'd have been all twisted up. And I don't know if she, like, twisted them a little bit back into shape. They were in the same drawer where the wooden spoon was. See, when I think of wooden spoons, I think of people cooking, and I also think of a stinging sensation on my rear end. My mom used to put those sunglasses on. She'd take them out, and she'd stick them on, and they would sit, you know, about like this. And then she'd go, and she'd go, Mr. Johnson! And then she'd start talking about what she thought of what you were doing. Mr. Johnson! Why are you acting like that? And, you know, it seemed to kind of make it possible at moments, at least, to almost start laughing at yourself, you know, because it's like, she's being really funny. This doesn't seem to be any condemnation. But she is kind of like poking at this attitude or whatever came out. And I found what happened was she disarmed things sometimes. Not sure if we would have killed each other if she hadn't done that, but sometimes it would really just kind of put an end to the stuff that was happening. Because my mom was really funny. Is really funny. I used to ask her to make faces sometimes. And when the older every time I visited, when I was grown and gone, I would, at one point I would say, Mom, make some faces. She goes, oh, no. I'd say, come on, Mom, make a few faces. No. And I'd have my camera, you know. And I'd try a couple more times, and then all of a sudden she'd make a few faces, and I'd click, click, click. You know. If I could stay still from laughing, you know, and actually take the picture, because she could always just completely crack me up. A very dexterous face. She could make just all sorts of weird faces. I mean, how someone like her could look that way, almost beyond me. So, Lord ever make faces at you when you're in a snit? You ever notice him? Like trying to put a mug on like yours maybe, or make you laugh when you're refusing to feel any happiness at all. You ever had a day like that where you refuse to feel any happiness? You are, no matter what happens, you are not going to feel anything good. Ever have that? Why would we do that? What? That could be. Maybe want attention. Maybe those at the same time. But what if you didn't want to feel good, or at least thought you didn't want to, and you went and like crawled inside of a closet where linen was kept under the bottom shelf and pulled the doors shut? What are you trying to do then? Anybody ever do that? The best friend I had in fifth grade was the only black person in the class, and he came in partway through. And there were these rolling bookshelves that had bookshelves on both sides. They're a little bit narrow on the top, and they got a little wider toward the bottom. And there was one of them near the wall. There was was nothing on the bottom shelf, and he went and he got inside that bookshelf. That's probably why we became best friends. Because I knew what he felt like. Because he was from somewhere else, and he didn't know anybody. And I knew just exactly what that felt like. And we became very, very good friends, and we loved to make banana cream pie, which wasn't actually in the form of a pie. It would just be all of it, and it just kind of stuffed into like a jar or some kind of container. And we would eat that out of that thing. And one of the wonderful things about him, he wasn't very tall. Or well, fifth grade, we were shorter. But he had a stepbrother who, I don't know, he must have been like part Maasai in his lineage because he was really tall. And this wonderful thing happened, which I did not experience much growing up, was that this big, scary guy, at least on that, in that area, because there was nobody like his size, he was on our side. And he didn't want to mess with us. His brother was around, and I didn't feel that way very many times growing up. But he didn't give me or his brother any trouble, just because I was his brother's friend and he was his brother's brother. And that's just the way it was. So I felt very special. And I wonder whatever happened to him. I don't know. But I would crawl into the linen closet, get on under the bottom shelf, and then pull those folding doors shut when I felt awful and maybe, I don't know if I thought I wanted to feel good or not, but what do you suppose I was doing? When somebody does that, what are they thinking? They feel like, what? Somebody say something? Well, they feel like hurt feelings, like nobody cares about them. They might be trying to express that to themselves. They're also hoping that someone will come and find them. Well, at the same time, kind of thinking in a way that they're hoping nobody will ever find them. But at the same time thinking, I hope someone will come looking. And I hope they'll look long enough to actually figure out that I'm in here, as embarrassing as that might be. And I hope that they'll want me to come out, and I hope that they will try to make me feel better, even though I will try to not let them do that. That's kind of what that's about. Didn't none of you ever did stuff like that? Oh, you did? What did you crawl into? Did you really? Ah! Who all is hidden in the linen closet when they were feeling bad? It's time to come out of the closet. Come on. Tell the truth. What? Well, anyway, my mom would never let me have an excuse for despair. She would never let despair go unchallenged, ever. And I don't think the Lord wants to let that go unchallenged either. And did anyone feel encouraged while Judah was talking? How many? Encouraged. If you didn't raise your hand anyway. A lot of people. You felt encouraged while you were looking the stuff up, right? It started to move you, right? And so that's a good thing. I think, you know, you've given a few drashes over the years. I think that one is really good, I think you're getting better and better. And I was thinking this last week about the little thing that, I don't know if he's a psychologist or what. My mom was worried about me. You know this. I've told you before when we were in Sacramento. I was about 12, and she brought me to this guy that some people would call a head shrinker. You remember this story? And I guess, I don't know, I'm not sure if I knew why I was there. Maybe I did. I knew my mom was worried about me. And this guy, so I'm in his office, and he had a bunch of stuff on the shelf. And he picks up a ball. I'm sitting in a chair. And I remember he probably said something to me, but he throws this ball at me. I'm going, well, I know what that means. I'm supposed to try to catch this stupid thing. Whether I'm scared to death or embarrassed, I tried to catch it. And I'm supposed to throw it back. And you know, he was really insightful because I didn't have to throw it too many times, and I think he realized, it's like, oh, this is not one of those kids. So, whew, the ordeal of having to try to catch the ball and throw it back to him was over. Like, thank you, Lord, for saving me from this guy that my mom thinks is going to try to help me. So we chatted a little bit. I don't really remember too much of what I said to him. I might have told him that I didn't feel so great, or maybe feel so great about myself. But he gave me this little card. It was probably the size of a business card. It might have even been his business card with this thing written on the back. And I was supposed to look in the mirror. I was supposed to say what that said. Today, tomorrow, and every day, you in the mirror are getting better and better every way. And you know, I mean, what? You mean it didn't cost any more than the price of the book? Yeah, I don't know what it cost to send me to that guy in 1971. Anyway, you know, I took the little card, and you remember this, right? I took the little card, and I had the little card, and I thought things about that little card, and I thought some things about the guy that gave me the card, and I might have wondered a little bit about him, and I'm sure he was a believer. I remember at least once, I thought, okay, I went to the bathroom, yeah, closed the door, and looked in the mirror. I said, today, tomorrow, and every day. I don't remember if I laughed. I mean, it makes me just laugh now. You're getting better and better in every way. It was like, you know, what? What did you say?
I'm talking to you.
I don't need no stinking badge. Is that funny? The problem was to look in the mirror and say that, and you can say that, but like the judge, you know, I've been to court quite a few times, usually with somebody else. One time with somebody that had two beers. By the way, if you get pulled over, do you know how many beers everyone that gets a DUI has had? Every one of them has had two beers. And do you know how stupid the judges and the cops and all those people are, and prosecutors, people, you know how stupid they are? They all believe that you had just two beers. No, they're not that stupid. They know how much you weigh. They know what your blood alcohol content was. They can figure out how much you had within like a certain space of time. So, at any rate, behind the judge is the authority of the governor and all of the highway patrol. and a whole bunch of people. There's authority behind the guy. And I watch people go into court, and they don't get it. They don't realize that there's authority behind that guy. And they'll mouth off, and they'll act like they're in charge, and like, oh, yeah, you think you can show me? And then you know what? They get shown. They get shown. And I've watched it happen to some where they, it's like, I'm just sitting there. I'm going, I mean, I don't even know these people, right? It's going, oh, just don't do that to yourself. But some of them do, and they get about the worst of what they can get, because the judge will treat them in large part according to the way they act toward the judge. But so anyway, that might not sound very related, but what I was thinking, see, when you look in the mirror, has anyone ever looked in a mirror and been your own judge? Anybody? Ever looked in the mirror and judge yourself? What authority is behind you when you judge yourself? Well, it's just whatever little bit of authority you have, and then all the authority of the kingdom of darkness will try to get behind you when you condemn yourself in the mirror. And there is power and authority behind that, and you can invite that. But to tell yourself, to look in the mirror and tell yourself tomorrow, today, tomorrow, and every day, you're getting better and better in every way. And I think you can tell yourself that. But you have to have authority behind it. And the authority comes from God, comes from His Son. What does He say about us? What does He tell us about ourselves? He tells us about what we were like, what we deserved, whether we were clean, but He tells us we're clean. He tells us we're righteous like Him. He tells us, as I am, so are you in this world. He tells us those things. He tells us that we're new creations. He tells us that the old has passed away, that new things have come, that He's taking many children from glory to glory. And that He is perfecting us. So the thing is, if you have the right idea, if you know who you belong to, and you know what He says about you, and what He's made to be true because of the work of His Son, you actually can look in the mirror and talk to yourself like that. You don't have to say that, but you could. And the thing is, it would be true. Because He doesn't leave us orphans. He doesn't leave us the way He found us, right? And He doesn't ever make us worse tomorrow than we were today, does He? Does He ever do that? So, isn't it true that in God, today, tomorrow, and every day, we actually are getting better and better in every way? That actually belongs to us? How nice are you to yourself, I want to know. How nice? Is it hard to be nice to yourself? Sometimes. I bet every one of us could be nicer to ourselves than we are. Just try to spend a day being as nice to yourself as Yeshua is to you. Now, being nice to yourself doesn't mean not to tell yourself the truth about something that might be problematic. But it would mean to tell yourself about it the way my mom did, like when she put on those glasses, or when she just talked about it when she didn't put the glasses on, because the thing is, when she talked about things that weren't quite the way they ought to be, it was never to get us to confirm that we were bad and that we should be worse, or that we should accept that that's what we were and that we were stuck there was never ever that. And I cannot recall a time when the Lord has spoken to me when he's ever tried to get me to think I was bad, getting worse, and that's just the way it is, ever. Can you? Are you all willing to be nicer to yourselves? Who wants to be nice to somebody else? I would like to be pretty nice to a lot of people. In fact, I'd like to be nice to some really tough people, some people that have a hard time saying are nice people. I would like to be nice to them. And I've noticed, I've had a long time to study me. And I've noticed that if I'm really thinking bad things about myself, it seems just way easier to tell other people bad things about themselves. Maybe even if not directly, just stuff that comes out might lean that way more. But when I'm feeling secure about who I belong to, I find it's a lot easier to respond to people that say not very nice things in a way that's a lot nicer. In a way that realizes, oh, this isn't about me. This is about the thorn that's stuck in them someplace. That's what this is about. And then sometimes the Lord gives grace to touch it. So I don't know. I suppose I'm wandering and meandering around here. So do we all agree that we shouldn't despair? That the Bible doesn't teach us that we should ever despair, but that it teaches us that we have lots of feelings and that the Lord doesn't criticize us for having feelings or even for feeling like we're on the edge of despair or really kind of sinking. He understands that, right? The Hebrews says that we don't have a high priest that is unable to sympathize with us. He can sympathize, been tempted in all things as us, but without sin. And that he's able to save to the uttermost those that come to him. Very questioning face, I have to ask. What's the question? Oh. What? Where am I going, Donald? Oh. You know, when Michael came up here and started reading, wasn't that one of the sweetest things you ever saw? For whatever reason, it's not hard for me to imagine it, any number of them, he is breaking down when he's reading those verses. But it's harder to imagine a grown son asking his father to come up and help him like that. And I was just really moved by that. And he did help him. And then maybe they helped each other. And it made me think of the passage that talks about the day when the hearts of the fathers will be turned towards, does it say sons? And the hearts of sons turn towards the fathers. And it's really about the reconciliation of a lot of junk and the evaporation of all kinds of reasons for having a problem with Papa. And it just seemed almost like a vision of that happening, just one father and one son. But I thought that that was a huge part of whatever today is supposed to be about. So I think I'll just look at two passages real quickly, and the first one is in the prophetical portion. It was a little worded a little differently in whatever. Let's see, what was Michael reading out of? Was that Stearns? The Lord has given me a tongue of those who are taught, that I may know how to sustain with a word him who is weary. Morning by morning he awakens my ear to hear as those who are taught. In one translation it says, the Lord has given me the tongue of disciples that I might sustain the weary with a word. This one again says, the Lord has given me the tongue of those who are taught, that I may know how to sustain with a word him who is weary. Morning by morning he awakens my ear to hear as those who are taught. The Lord has opened my ear, and I was not rebellious. I turned not backwards. And it struck me today when I was looking at this that who opens the person's ear? Does it say I opened my ear? What does it say? Yeah, it says, morning by morning he awakens my ear to hear as those who are taught. The Lord has opened my ear. And then, apparently, he made a choice. God opened his ear. He says, I was not rebellious. I turned not backwards. So, anybody here ever think you don't hear from the Lord? Seems very common to me that people think, oh, I never hear from God. I'm pretty sure most of those people that say that actually do hear and have heard from God. But the thing is, if he opens our ears himself, then don't you suppose he's also made us able to hear? Well, actually, that's what opening an ear is, right? Able to hear. He helps us a lot. He wakes us up, he awakens our ear, and we can hear. And the Lord will give us a tongue of those who are taught, those that know how to sustain the weary with a word. And then in 2 Corinthians, it says in the first chapter, I'm turning to the first 2 Corinthians, I have to turn to the second one. It's kind of like the other left. Says here, blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Yeshua the Messiah, the Father of mercies and God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our affliction, so that we may be able to comfort those who are in any affliction with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God. So, I've been noticing that this world is full of people that need to be comforted. Broken people, broken-hearted people, people in all sorts of trouble, people that are despairing. I've been noticing this for a long time. I've noticed it so much at times that it almost incapacitated me, made me weep, and sort of, I think maybe made me ineffective. I'm not sure if it's really compassion, if it makes you completely unable to show compassion. But sometimes if it hits you, if you let it hit you, it's just overwhelming, the amount of pain and need. I think it's good to be overwhelmed. It just can't stay that way. That's all. So the Lord give us this ability to sustain with the word those that are weary. And the comfort that we can bring to people isn't our own comfort. It's not comfort that we manage to supply. We can actually comfort people with the comfort that God has comforted us with. So it's actually the comfort that God gives. It's God's comfort. And we can let it flow into our life and out to other people. And so that's the kind of comfort that doesn't necessitate us having the answer for all of their problems, to figure everything out and think that we have to, like, come up with solutions. It's like, you know, sometimes a solution, see, a lot of times the problem isn't the problem in the first place, so the solution also isn't the solution to the problem. But God's comfort can go in and just affect a lot of things. And so, I think when I look out at all of you, this is what I think. Today, tomorrow, and every day, every last one of you is getting better and better in every way. Because the God that bought us out of sin and darkness and translated us into his kingdom of light doesn't leave us the way he found us. So this must be the reality of redemption and of the new life and of being the righteousness of God, as hard as it is to grasp that, and as hard as sometimes it is to want to just embrace that as though it were someone you just loved and hadn't seen for a while, you know, we really ought to be able to. Because it's true. And it's happening. And so we really don't have cause for despair. But when you feel like despairing, don't kick yourself. Just scream it all out in front of your Heavenly Father. Throw up all over the place if you need to. He can take it, help you wipe it up, or he'll wipe it all up for you. And he'll just keep doing this work that he started doing in us, that he's doing for his own good pleasure, actually pleasing himself with what he's doing in you. So I just hope we'll all be encouraged to just believe that he's doing what he says he's doing, and have the grace to let him show us the evidence of it, because it's there. So the Lord bless you and keep you and cause his countenance to shine upon you and be gracious to you and give you peace. Yivarechach Adonai v'yishmarech Ya'er Adonai panav alech v'yehu v'nech Yisa Adonai panav alech Yesem lechach.